It's Talking Travel with Sally Lucas, and I don't know where we're going today.
It's a surprise today.
Surprise! Where are we going?
Well, just a little. This is just a little quirky thing. When I was just reading something the other day, and it's five fascinating facts about the Vikings.
Oh, I like Vikings.
Yeah, a lot of people love the shows that were about the Vikings. A little bit about Athens. We haven't talked much about Greece recently, and about such an ancient European city, and a couple of the new trending places that you might want to go to that are a little bit off the radar again.
Oh, sounds very interesting.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Well, I hope so.
All right. Well, talking about Vikings.
I love
Vikings. We're not talking about Uhtred of Bevanbear. I'm a Last Kingdom fan, so.
Oh, dear. Anyway, look, I'm sure there's lots of listeners out there that love all sorts of things about the Norse people from the Scandinavian region and some of the shows, as you say, that we've had about the Vikings,
yes,
which is fascinating. And they had very advanced navigational skills, and their contributions to trade and culture left a lasting impact on history. So it's more complex. They are more complex than we understand, put it that way. And they weren't a unified group, and contrary to popular belief, the term Viking doesn't refer to a specific ethnic group or kingdom. Instead, it was a term used to describe activities, particularly raiding and trading that was conducted by the Norsemen. So it was an activity rather than a person. But the Vikings hailed from the current-day Norway, Sweden and Denmark, and were made up of various tribes and communities with their own leaders and customs. But they were master sailors and navigators, and they explored far beyond their Scandinavian homeland, even way back then. And their ships were long ships, of which they were ingeniously designed that they could navigate them in both open seas and shallow rivers. So they were very advanced in their ship designing as well. So Leif Erikson, we all know that name as a notable Viking explorer. He's credited with being the first European to set foot in North America nearly 500 years before Christopher Columbus.
Wow.
So they go way back, and it's really important. And they've often been stereotyped as just being chaotic marauders and all these with their axes and hatchets in the air and all that sort of stuff. But they had their society had a very structured system of governance, and they had regular assemblies and early forms of democratic meetings where free men actually gathered to settle disputes, pass laws and make decisions, which is interesting. But Viking women also enjoyed a level of freedom and respect that was rare in medieval Europe. They could own property, inherit land, and initiate divorce, even way back then.
Oh.
So it's quite interesting. And they often managed farms and households while the men were away on the voyages, which is often the case. You think about women during history, whether the men have been at war or at sea, the women are at home, keeping the home fires burning, as we all hear that saying. And that has been typical of women for so long. We're strong characters we are.
Yes, not we
women. No, not at all. So they were legendary shield maidens, they were called, and they even took up arms and fought alongside the men. But they also had a very modern approach to life as well, and they established thriving trade networks across Europe and beyond, and they exchanged goods such as fur, amber and weapons for silver, lake and spices. But the Viking Age was only approximately 793 to 1066 AD. So that's a heck of a long time ago. And it was much about exploration and cultural exchange as it was about conquest. So it wasn't just about conquest, even though all the things you see often tell you that. It's, of course, with their movies. But, this is what they really did. So they did lots, and lots that gave us advancements to move forward as well. So they're very important.
Interesting bunch of people.
Interesting bunch of people, indeed. And getting away from that, the next thing we're going to talk about is Athens. I haven't talked about Athens for a long time, so I thought we'll go on to that one next because it's such an ancient, iconic capital and it's got so much interesting history attached to it.
Yep. Well, I look forward to talking about that.
Yeah.
I was just saying to you, reminds me of that movie with Cliff Richard, Summer Holiday, where they catch the bus.
I loved that movie
Athens.
When that came out. I think I loved Cliff Richard as well.
Don't get me started on Cliff Richard.
And the songs. I did. I loved all of that. Good memories.
Now it's Talking Music instead of Talking Travel.
Doesn't matter. No, bit of both.
That's right. This is Talking Travel and we are talking Athens.
Athens today, yeah. And I thought it really is an iconic capital bursting with ancient history, remarkable culture and, of course, gastronomy as well. We can't go past that anywhere we go.
Gastronomy?
Can we? Food.
Oh, Okay.
I don't know. I'm going to have to send you back to school.
I know. I think so.
She doesn't know where Milbredale is, and she doesn't know what gastronomy
is.
I'm
learning a lot today.
So it's one of the world's oldest cities, with a history spanning more than 3,400 years. And it is, you know, Greece and Athens is on the top of most people's wish list to go to. Admittedly, again, we're talking a lot about capital cities recently and how some of them are overcrowded and have too many tourists. But I think this is the birthplace of democracy, the home of celebrated philosophers like Plato and Socrates. And you've got breathtaking landmarks there that go back to the 5th century BC. So you've only got to talk about, you know, the Parthenon and the Acropolis, which is still there, perched on the hill overlooking Athens. And even at night when it's lit up, it's just such a spectacle. It's absolutely magnificent. And to think that it's still there, a lot of it is still standing, you know, that's just, we look at old cities, old buildings, sorry, here, and they're 200 years old, and we go, oh, look at that, it's 200 years old, you know.
You ain't seen nothing.
No, you ain't seen nothing yet. But, the Parthenon and the Acropolis, they were built, you know, a long time ago and constructed using white marble. There's also a small temple there called of Athena Nike, because Nike is a Greek word, of course, which is where the Nike sports product got the name from. And then you've got lots of other buildings there, not just the Acropolis as well, that you can look at. And, of course, the whole thing is UNESCO listed as well. But then you can go down to the base of the Acropolis and you've got the bustling Plaka Monastiraki district, which is great and famous for its cafes and tavernas and all that sort of stuff, where you can have a bit of fun. It's a bit of a fun, buzzy area down there. And then, of course, you've got Syntagma Square, which is one of the famous squares located in the centre of the city. The Grand Hellenic Parliament Building, which originally was built as a royal palace by Greece's first monarch, King Otto. And if you're lucky enough, you might witness the changing of the guard, which is performed on a regular basis every hour, which is quite something to see as well. They've got a central market, which is quite a lively market there, also on a Sunday, you've got the Monastiraki Flea Market, which, of course, is great fun. Which is selling all sorts of second-hand...
Fleas.
No, fleas. No, it's funny how they call it a flea market. I wonder where that originated from. Yeah. Maybe they did sell fleas originally. I don't know.
That's where they got fleas.
Yeah, that's where they caught the fleas. And antique shops and all that sort of stuff. And as I said, gastronomy. So, you know, again, you're looking at the famous, you know, ever-popular souvlaki or your gyros with pork or wrapped in a pita bread or your tzatziki. And, of course, the famous Greek salad full of beautiful, fresh heirloom tomatoes and cucumber and feta and onion. I mean, I ate so much of that, I think I almost became a Greek salad when I was over there. But one place people do forget about, and I recommended it to my nephew a couple of years ago, and he said, Auntie Sally, thank God you told me about it. And it's Mount Lycabettus, or Lycabettus, Lycabettus. It's spilt all sorts of different ways. And it's a Cretaceous limestone hill. It's about 900 feet or 277 metres above sea level, and it's the highest point in central Athens. It's got pine trees all around the base, and you can go there by the funicular, which goes all the way up. I don't think you'd want to climb. It'd be a bit of a hot, steep climb. But you have a little railway station in the Kolonaki area down below, and at its two peaks, there's a 19th century chapel of St. George, a theatre and a restaurant. So you can go up there, and it's the highest point. You're looking right out as far as the Aegean Sea, and you're looking over the whole of Athens. It's quite spectacular.
Sounds beautiful.
Really quite spectacular. It was originally, one of the stories was that it was the refuge of wolves, which is Lycos in Greek, and that possibly is the origin of its name, which just means it was a hill that is walked by wolves. So that, and of course Romulus and Remus were the ones who supposedly founded Rome as well. Yeah, again, the wolves are an important sort of thing in mythology, aren't they, in history over there. So, but the mythologically, Lycabettus is credited to Athena, who created it when she dropped a limestone mountain she had been carrying from the Pellene Peninsula for the construction of the Acropolis. So that's again a myth. But it's got this wonderful open-air amphitheatre that was built only, it's not old, it was built, I think, back in the 1960s, but it was closed in 2008 due to safety concerns. But actually, they decided it needed renovating and it had to be reopened because it was such a beautiful amphitheatre, even though it's a recent one. And it was completed in 2023. And some of the artists that have performed there over the year, like Ray Charles, Joan Baez, B.B. King, Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee Lewis, Leonard Cohen, On and on it goes. Bob Dylan, Peter Gabriel, Nick Cave, Bjork, Deep Purple, UB40, Tracy Chapman, Brian Ferry, the Buena Vista Social Club, Iron Maiden.
Who hasn't performed
who
there?
Who hasn't performed there? But imagine being up there and what a wonderful performance you'd have. The actual acoustics would be absolutely incredible. So don't leave that out if you're going to Athens. People forget about Mount Lycabettus, and it's really worth the trip to do that. So, yeah. So that's a little bit about Athens today, just a little bit of history and just, you know, a few things you might like to add to do whilst you're there. Yeah.
Add that to my bucket list, my long, long bucket list.
I know. Doesn't it keep letting longer?
I know, especially when I'm sitting here with you and you're talking about all these awesome places. So.
Well, that's all good. It gives us all something to think about.
That's right.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's right. It's Talking Travel and we're going to the hot deals now.
We are, and I thought we'd talk a little bit about Spain. There's been some lovely tours come out from Spain. It's such an interesting country as well, again with lots of history because they had not only the Christian side of things, they've had, you know, the Moorish side of things as well. And even when you go to Cordoba, the actual church there is a combination of all different architectures because they, back then it was too expensive for them to all have their own church. So they shared a church. Can you imagine that happening today?
No, it would not happen today.
You know, it just wouldn't happen, would it? So it's a wonderful country if you haven't been to Spain. And there's some lovely itineraries at the moment out. One, there's a 15-day one, which I think's a fantastic itinerary. You're starting in Madrid and you go all the way up north to Bilbao, where the famous Guggenheim Museum is, to San Sebastian, which is the foodie capital of Spain. And then you go down to Pamplona, the famous running of the bulls is there. Barcelona, of course, the famous Sagrada Familia of Gaudi.
I love that.
Yeah, incredible. Beautiful. And then you go down to Valencia, which is a very interesting town as well. And you end up down at Granada, the famous Alhambra Palace, Costa del Sol. And then you go on to Sevilla, of course, famous for the oranges. And you include a little diversion there to Gibraltar, where you see the Gibraltar monkeys, etc. And then, as I said, Cordoba, which is really interesting. And then Toledo and then back to Madrid. It's a lovely itinerary. There is a shorter one as well, and it just doesn't go to the northern areas. So you're not going up to Bilbao and Pamplona, etc. It's cutting that part out, but it's doing all the rest. It's just that people might not have as much time. It's a 9-day itinerary. And that's from under 4,000. And the 15-day one at the moment has got a reduction of just under $800 per person if you want to book on that one. Just a matter of checking what dates are available on that for you to go. And if you're also interested, there's a real, which a lot of people are, there's a lovely itinerary doing Morocco. So again, it's a fascinating country to go to, and you might want to do it. You're in Spain, you might want to duck down and do Morocco as well. And they've got savings of $700 per person on a range of itineraries from June to October, which is doing Morocco in depth from Casablanca all the way through to Marrakesh and all the bazaars and everything. It's just very, very, very interesting parts of the world. Getting closer to home, I reckon this is fantastic. If you had the time and the money, but look, it's 60 nights circumnavigation of Australia.
With 60. So what, well, about 3 months?
We're a big country.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so you need that time.
You need that time to get around. And this is Cairns back to Cairns. And when I had looked it up the other day, things like the private bridge deck balcony suite and balcony staterooms are already sold out. Can you believe that? Mm. And I mean, that's not the lead-in price, that's the upmarket, top of the range. So it's incredible. People love these sort of journeys, people that love ocean voyages. But like, you're going to Cairns from Lizard Island, you're going up to Davy Reef, an island called Restoration Island, Thursday Island, the tip of Cape York. You're going to the Gove Peninsula as well, onto the Tiwi Island, Darwin and the Tiwi Islands. Then you go right around then, down the Kimberley, King George River and the Falls. You go to Rockart, Prince Frederick Harbour, the Hunter River, Ashmore Reef, Montgomery Reef, Talbot Bay and the horizontal waterfalls, the Lacepede Islands, and that's during turtle season. If that's not in turtle season, they don't always go. The Rowley Shoals, the Dampier Archipelago, Exmouth, Ningaloo Reef, Shark Bay World Heritage, the Abrolhos Islands, Fremantle, Busselton, Augusta, Albany, the Recherche Archipelago, Cape Le Grand National Park at Lucky Bay, which is just fantastic. Go past the Bunda Cliffs, which are just spectacular. Flinders Island, Coffin Bay, Kangaroo Island, Adelaide, Port Fairy, the Apollo Bay and the 12 Apostles, Phillip Island, Launceston and the Tamar River, Sydney, Trial Bay, Tangalooma, Fraser Island, the Whitsundays, Townsville, and then do a side trip by air to Longreach was included. It's part of the cruise option, so you're not paying any extra, and then eventually you finish up back in Cairns.
And then you need a holiday from your holiday.
Oh, my God. But what an incredible itinerary.
It sounds amazing.
Oh, just absolutely unbelievable.
You know, but sometimes, you know, rents can so expensive. You maybe, you know, get on a cruise.
And I mean, it's all your meals.
Exactly.
You know, it's all your basic excursions are included. You know, all your daily excursions activities. You get an interpretive program with hosts. You're getting premium wine, beer, spirits all day. 24-hour barista-style coffee and tea, a commemorative expedition jacket, pre-cruise accommodation when transfers included, the charter flight, as I said, from Townsville to Longreach. So, you know, it's just, yeah, I just think it would be fantastic if you had that time and the urge to do that. I just think that is a fantastic itinerary.
Sounds great.
And also, just if you wanted to follow the Northern Lights from Norway to Finland.
Yes, I would like to do
you'd
that.
You'd like to do that. The Hurtigruten people have just launched their 26-27 programs already. Can you believe that? Departures from September 26, which I think is a bit early, to March 2027. So you really, to me, the perfect time would be between December and February for you to do that. More, you know, I think, chance of seeing the Northern Lights in a more spectacular fashion at that particular time of the year. But they've got an early bird offer now, which gives you $150 per person on board credit. So you can use that to spend on your drinkies. And closer to home, we've got a lovely trips on the Murray, doing that lovely cruise on the Murray River. I still think that. Can you imagine how peaceful and relaxing that would be?
I want to do a cruise on the Murray River.
That, I think, just would be just lovely. And that's an 8-day cruise, and they've got departures from September to December. Again, fully inclusive. Once you pay for that, that's it. And also there's a lovely one doing the West Coast Adventure. This is 18 days. So that goes all the way from Perth to Darwin, going through the wonderful pinnacles, Kalbarri National Park, Monkey Mia, Ningaloo Reef, the wonderful Karangini National Park, Port Hedland, the Great Sandy Desert, Broome, Derby, Halls Creek, El Questro, Kununurra, Lake Argyle, Lloyd River, Catherine, Darwin. Again, wonderful itinerary, 18 days. Look, there's lots of fabulous stuff out there. Some are with discounts, some not, but you've just got to go and see what's available, and there's a bargain somewhere to be had.
I want to do everything.
Well, that bucket list, I think you've run out of room.
Yeah, I need to.
Another A4 page coming up.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sally.
Thanks,
we'll see you next
lot,
week.
Amanda.
For,
yes.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.